Thank you for joining us for Sound Reasoning with Christian apologist and minister Perseus Poku of Sound Reasoning Ministries. It's our prayer that today's program will educate, train, and empower you to defend your Christian faith with confidence. Perseus has his bachelor's in history and a master's degree in apologetics. We hope you enjoy this time of equipping so that you can answer questions to defend your Christian faith effectively. Now here's Perseus Poku on Sound Reasoning.
We want to welcome you to Sound Reasoning. Today we have a special guest, Dr. Clay Jones from Biola University. Dr. Jones is the professor of Christian apologetics. And Dr. Jones, how long have you been a professor at Biola?
Well, this is my ninth full-time year, and thank you for having me join you today. This is my ninth full-time year, and I taught at Biola for a year or so before that as a part-time professor, and it's been a lot of fun. I thank God for the opportunity.
Thank you again for being on Sound Reasoning. Today we wanted to talk about Dr. Jones' article that he penned for the Christian Research Journal, which showed up on volume 35 in 2012, article number 3. The biographical test updated is very informative, and I thought it would be great and excellent for us to hear more about it and why that's significant. So, Dr. Jones, my first question is, what exactly are manuscripts? I'm sure a lot of our listeners hear the term manuscript, and they don't have a very good understanding of it. So what are manuscripts?
That's a good question, and I think you're right. A lot of people don't really know what that is. Manuscript, actually, manuscript means handwritten. They're just actually handwritten. And so, and we break manuscripts down. There's two major kinds of manuscripts. There was papyrus manuscripts, and those were originally what people would do is just take little pieces of papyrus, and if you wet them and they'd strip the bark off of a papyrus plant, and they'd lay them crosswise and pound them out when they're wet, and it actually ended up making a very firm thing to write on, and that was for centuries. That's what they used. Then around the 3rd or 4th century, they began to use animal skins, and that's what we would call parchment. But what's in common, the key for the word manuscript, is just simply means it's handwritten. And so once, of course, obviously, movable type came about, and everybody started getting away from writing things by hand for good reason. You had a lot more accuracy. So, but what we're basing the New Testament on is things primarily that are handwritten because those are the oldest.
Right. And so how were some of these manuscripts found?
That's a very interesting story too. And the answer is they're found all over the place. They're found in places that you would expect. Of course, the most common would be monasteries. A lot of manuscripts are, because of course Christians in the church, especially in the Catholic Church, the church, and then of course in the Greek Orthodox, not long after that, you had all these manuscripts being collected by monks and monasteries. We also find actually quite a few, a lot of them come from garbage heaps, believe it or not, in various forms. People would reuse, would take these manuscripts, they'd go to a garbage heap and grab a bunch of this stuff and reuse it for their own purposes in different ways, and we would find them there. Sometimes, now, of course, in recent days, people get them from antiquities collectors because people are looking all over the place for where there might be just a manuscript found someplace. But anyway, so they're found every place from garbage dumps to just digging through stuff, monasteries, as I said.
So who wrote these manuscripts?
Well, if you're talking about biblical manuscripts, we think that the authors of the traditional authors wrote them. Now, that isn't, I should say it's not 100%. What I mean is that sometimes, we think, for instance, sometimes Paul dictated to a scribe. But for the most part, we think, and that's obviously we don't have any kind of a problem with that, as some of the original authors, you know, may have dictated to a scribe who wrote it for them. But for the most part, we believe that Matthew, you know, wrote Matthew, and John wrote John.
Uh-huh.
Mark, of course, if you hear the teachings of the church historians, the early church historians got his information from Peter and was writing down the sermons of Peter.
Right.
Paul wrote a lot of his letters, but he may not have written all of them. Some of them he might have been using a scribe to dictate to. But that's basically who wrote it down, either the actual authors who are listed or somebody who was taking basically dictation for them.
So why should we as Christians pay attention to these manuscripts the amount that we have? Why should we be interested in that?
Well, the thing about manuscripts is, well, let me contrast this to, for instance, the Quran. The Quran has been kept by, you know, one group of people, basically, for over the centuries, kept control of the Quran. The trouble with that, and what Islamic scholars will say, see, you know, I mean, we know exactly what the Quran is going to or says, and we know it's accurate, and we don't have variant readings. Well, they don't have variant readings because they got rid of variant readings. That's why they don't have variant readings.
Right.
The trouble with that is it's actually less reliable then. And what I mean by that is when you have pieces, you know, I mean, larger and smaller pieces of the New Testament by the thousands, Greek manuscripts, in different repositories, in different places, all over the ancient Christian world, when you have that going on, you don't have the ability for someone to simply go, well, this is what it really should say. And see, because when you have one group that's responsible for maintaining, let's say, the Quran,
mm-hmm.
well, that group can alter it any way they want. Who's to say? How could you double check?
Right.
But that's not the case with the New Testament, because there's manuscripts, you know, we're still finding manuscripts.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm going to a thing, Craig Hazen and I, who works in our department, runs our department, are going to a thing with Josh McDowell where they're actually going to be reviewing more manuscripts that they found in just 2 weeks from now, because we're actually coming across more new manuscripts, all the time. But the fact that we're doing this
uh-huh.
means, and the fact that we keep encountering new manuscripts, and some of them very, very early, means that we can check the accuracy of our text now from manuscripts that are appearing from all over the place, and it shows its reliability,
mm-hmm.
and it also removes the ability for it to have been tampered with, and so manuscripts are very, very important.
So which one of those manuscripts are the earliest? Is it the P52, or has that been updated?
Well, P52, or the John Rylands Papyrus,
mm-hmm.
as it's also called, is still officially our earliest manuscript, dating somewhere around 117. It could be a little earlier than that, it could be a little later than that, but I mean, that's kind of a ballpark number that people give out.
Mm-hmm.
Is obviously, so that is right now officially. There are some words actually that we may actually right now have some earlier manuscripts. There is a group, in fact this is part of the thing that's going on with Josh McDowell,
mm-hmm.
There's some people, some scholars, Daniel Wallace in particular, who's working with this. They think they might have actually found some earlier manuscripts than that, but they're not willing to go on record until this is verified by all the scholars in all the various places, because they don't want to come out and go, I think we might even have found earlier manuscripts, but we, you know, I mean, they don't want to do that until they're sure.
Excellent.
So, but we may have actually found earlier manuscripts than that. As for P52, which is a portion of John, the Gospel of John, it's really interesting because it does verify for us, coming from, well, somewhere around 117 or 120 AD, it does verify for us that we are actually, our New Testament Testaments are actually accurate,
right.
At least when it comes to that portion of the Gospel of John, back to the 1:17. Now, some people don't think that John wrote the Gospel of John until like 90 A.D., or at least maybe in the late 80s.
Right.
Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, but if that's the case, then we've got a piece of the Gospel of John that's only 30 years after it was actually written.
Right.
And so the idea that over time, you know, the Scripture's been tampered with and tampered with and tampered with and tampered with, just isn't true. It just isn't true, very simply.
Right. So from what you're saying, in terms of the span of time, whereas the manuscript or that we found has been written, compared to the date that it was written on, matters. So you're saying the longer span of time may lead to possible alterations or non-realistic data, but the closer it is to the event, of the occurrence of the event, makes it more possible that it is factual. Is that what you're saying?
Right, and that's what the bibliographical test itself is. Excuse me, and very simply that, you know, we're comparing the overall amount of manuscripts and compared to other documents in particular, like Homer, Plato, or Socrates, or whatever. We're comparing the sheer number of manuscripts, and we're comparing that with the earliness of the earliest manuscript that we have compared to the date of writing, or what
right.
we call the autograph. We call what scholars call the document that was originally penned, the very first time when Matthew sat down to write and took his pen and put it on, you know, his quill or whatever, and put it on the parchment. Or, well, actually, in this case, it would have been on the papyrus. Mm-hmm. We call that the autograph,
right?
The original document. So we look at the nearness from our earliest extant manuscript to the autograph, and then the sheer number of manuscripts, and then we compare that with other ancient books. And when we do that, of course, the New Testament comes out with flying. And so we call that the bibliographical test, as I said.
Excellent. So your article in the Christian Research Journal brought up a very important aspect of the bibliographical data, and you were challenging apologists as well as other Christians to make sure that the dates, the numbers that we have for, let's say, Homer's Iliad, or Demosthenes, or Tacitus, or the other people that we've been citing for a number of years, that we have an accurate number in terms of the up-to-date findings, in terms of quantity. So can you elaborate
right.
on that and this, why that's so significant?
Yeah. What happened was, is over the years, I've been teaching a course for Biola's Christian Apologetics Program, or MA in Christian Apologetics Program, entitled In Defense of the Resurrection, and so I would think, you know, I'd want to get into that we really can trust the transmission of the New Testament. So really, when we look at the New Testament, we're looking at an accurate transmission of it. And so we look at this, and I keep noticing the Christian apologists kept increasing the number of Greek manuscripts, and because it does increase.
Right.
And so as the number of Greek manuscripts would increase, I thought, well, okay, it keeps getting bigger. And one day I remember, in fact, I'm sitting right where I was when I thought about this, I thought, that's interesting that the numbers never go up for any of these other manuscripts, like Homer's Iliad, as you mentioned, or Socrates, or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's interesting that those numbers aren't going up. And I thought, I said Socrates, by the way, I meant Sophocles. But anyway, for Herodotus or Sophocles or Plato or Caesar
mm-hmm.
or whatever, how come those numbers aren't going up? So I thought, well, let's take Homer, which is, you know, the New Testament's always been compared to Homer.
Right.
But, and they've been, you know, we've been saying it's 643 ancient manuscripts of Homer, and we've been comparing that to the thousands of the New Testament. Right. So I decided I'd look in to see what the recent count is. Anyway, it came out that instead of 643 manuscripts, that a fellow named Martin West at Oxford had done a new catalog, and instead of 643, uh-huh. there's actually 1,757 manuscripts of Homer. Uh-huh. And when I saw that, I went, "Oh, you know, we're off by about three times more manuscripts." And I thought, we've got, for instance, on Herodotus, instead of there being 8 manuscripts, there's 109. Instead of Sophocles being 100, there's 193. Instead of Plato, there only being 7, there's 210, and so on. And I thought, well, we've got to, you know, my fear was that some apologist was going to be in a debate and was going to be using these numbers against an atheist of some sort, or some sort of skeptic, and this guy's going to say, well, that's not even right.
Right.
That's not, there's 1,757 of Plato, you know, of Homer's manuscripts of the Iliad. It's not 643, and the guy was going to go, there's what? And then he was going to be, it was going to be an embarrassing moment.
Exactly.
He did not want to be proven wrong in a debate in front of an audience and look like, because even if the audience goes, well, that's a relatively small point, the point is you got your facts wrong.
Exactly.
And so that's where I went, you know, I better, you know, and anyway, I was just kind of surprised as I kept doing the numbers going, you know, we haven't. And I understand why, because it's been a motivation for people to go, well, let's get the latest number of Greek manuscripts.
Right.
But the other fields of scholarship haven't been static.
Right.
Those that have been studying other, you know, scholars. So anyway, that's what generated that.
Well, I appreciate that information, because I've used the old data myself recently. So when I read the article,
sure.
I said, oh, I need to look more into it and to make sure that my facts are straight. So I do appreciate that. So in terms of what you just said, where can I go? Where can someone else go to find out the most up-to-date data in terms of quantity of those ancient writings?
Well, at least right now, at least at this moment, there's nothing more up-to-date than my article, and I'm thankful to say the entire article is online.
Excellent.
So people can go, you know, sooner or later somebody's going to come along and update this again. It's a lot of work.
Sure.
And there's not a lot of motive to update it again, simply because, you know, I mean, it's not going to change that much in a year, if you know what I mean, because we're only talking about a year, year and a half.
Right.
I mean, obviously, the numbers aren't going to be hugely different, you know, 18 months later.
Right.
But sooner or later. But right now, you know, people can go to equip.org and look up the bibliographical test updated, and they can see, you know, I've documented all of the more recent numbers.
Excellent. Now, my last question deals with transmission in the Bible, specifically the New Testament. And oftentimes, one of the questions that I get is, what is the best translation? And so I just want to hear from you in terms of if our New Testament, which is written in English, is coming from the Greek New Testament manuscripts, what should we tell laypersons or other Christians who are interested in finding out the best translation, as they call it, of the scriptures?
Well, that's a great question, and for some extremely controversial, as you know, Perseus. I mean, because you have a few people, and they're a minority that are what we call King James only.
Right.
And that is, they believe that the King James is some of them actually, many of them actually believe that the King James is inerrant. When I had my radio show, I used to do a radio program. When I had my radio program, Contend for Truth, I had on to debate a King James only advocate. And frankly, he folded up pretty quickly, because what they do is, for King James was based basically on the manuscript called the Textus Receptus, or received text. And King James is based on that. And what they'd say is, see, we have this text, this received text has been transmitted to us, and then we base the King James on that text, and this was done by prayerful men. And so today, some of them will even say that the King James is itself inerrant. Well, that's my question to this fellow. Mm-hmm. That's not true. My question was, what scripture is it that tells us that the Textus Receptus is inerrant?
Right.
And of course, he couldn't come up with one. Of course, there wouldn't be a scripture that says the Textus Receptus is inerrant.
Right.
Why should we believe that? Why should we choose to believe that a certain set of texts is more reliable necessarily, than another set of texts just because, well, this is called the received text? We're going to say, well, therefore, this is, this is inerrant. And he really had no answer for that. And from then on, the whole thing crumbles because you don't have any logical reason for saying the Textus Receptus is the only text we should trust.
Right.
And most scholars today say we shouldn't just we certainly do look at the Textus Receptus. That's mm-hmm. one of the things that we've used to say, to make sure that our New Testament is as accurate as can be, but we also look at the thousands of other Greek
right.
manuscripts and compare them
right.
To see, to find out the best text. So King James is a fine translation,
right.
but it's certainly not, the only one, and frankly, I would even say I don't think it's necessarily the best.
Right.
I think that the New American Standard, if you want a very literal reading, is a very good translation. I personally like the English, the new, it's relatively new. I like the English Standard Version, but I have a Bible program that I got from Word Search, and I will go through, and I have three Bibles pulled up all the time.
Right.
I have the New American Standard, and I have the English Standard Version, and I have the New International Version, and I use those all the time to kind of look at the various meanings. So I think any of those, I would encourage today's audience, I would say get the English Standard Version or the NIV, or I like the New American Standard Bible. I think it's a great translation. It doesn't read very smoothly,
mm-hmm.
so it's not necessarily my first choice, but I use it all the time because it's so literal to kind of check the meaning of what they're doing with ESV or NIV.
Right. I appreciate that. I think what you just said would be a huge blessing to the average layperson in terms of the finding out the truth of translations and which ones they should read. Now, in terms of the Textus Receptus, how does that relate to Erasmus' writings?
Oh, boy, that's been a long time. But, it's been too long for me to say that I've studied that particular issue to even know how to answer that question. Obviously, Erasmus was a scholar that was trusted, but it's been too long for me to even. I am afraid. I think I can start to venture some things, but I haven't studied it recently enough that I'm. I think what I venture might be incorrect, so I'd better skip that.
I appreciate that. The reason why I asked because I read somewhere where they were talking about the King James. Was also built on some of Erasmus' early work. So that's why...
I think that's the case. But like I said, I'd better not venture farther.
I appreciate that. Well, Dr. Jones, thank you so much for sharing with us on this episode. I've been totally edified by this discussion, and I know that people that are listening also are touched by your responses. So we thank you again, and hopefully we can have you come back on to further elaborate on some of the other things going on in terms of apologetics. So thank you again.
Very good. Well, pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me on, Perseus.
Thanks for listening to Sound Reasoning with apologist and minister Perseus Poku from Sound Reasoning Ministries. It's our prayer that today's lesson has equipped you to share and defend your Christian faith with boldness. Sound Reasoning Ministries offers training in apologetics, biblical studies, and systematic theology. Join in on discussions on Facebook at Sound Reasoning Ministries. For more information about the ministry, to send an email, ask a question, or support the ministry, visit online at srministries.org. That's srministries.org. Listen again next week at this same time. And remember, Titus 1:9 says, hold firm to the trustworthy message as has been taught, so that you can encourage others by sound doctrine and refute those who oppose it. Sound Reasoning Ministries, srministries.org.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art, inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.